I'd like to call this Council and Committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of Council are present.
There are no announcements this evening. There is an addendum with respect to Report PDS 29-2016 relative to the Industrial Land Strategy, and there are some revised recommendations that will be dealt with as we move through the agenda. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest, Councillor? None.
Yeah, thank you, Your Worship.
Do we have a week off? How quickly we forget.
Yes, I have a conflict of interest in regards to the report IS-04-2016, as I'm one of the property owners.
IS-04-2016. Councillor Butler.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Under Land Committee Minutes, I'm going to have to declare an interest, a conflict of interest.
GAO04/LC05. That's just for one item, isn't it?
Yes, just for the one item, for the Princeton Street notice.
Just a second. It is item 5, 3, sub 5, which relates to the Princeton Avenue property.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so when we deal with that, we'll corporate and community services, so that would be, sorry, 6, right? Thank you. When we deal with that, then somebody will raise that, or I'll remind everyone. Are there any other disclosures? Any interest? Okay, there being none. There's a public notice with respect to a public meeting for a town-initiated zoning bylaw amendment for 4152 Erie Road, which is the northeast corner of the property that we own at Bay Beach. And that will take place Monday, April the 4th, 2016 at 6 p.m. in the Town Hall Council Chambers. And the recommendation report with respect to that will be available on our website on Wednesday, March 30th, 2016. There is a public meeting this evening, and that's relative to the Nye Road Municipal Drain. And so the way we ordinarily do these, and this is pursuant to provincial legislation, we will have a report from our drainage superintendent, I presume, and then the engineer will provide us with some background comments as well with respect to this. Is that your understanding, Mr. Maiden? And then after they are finished providing their comments and background information, I will ask members of the public if there's anyone who wishes to address council relative to the proposed drainage assessment. And then after that, depending on what questions may be raised, we may ask the engineer to provide some comments, or Mr. Maiden, you. Okay? So if we could, would you please come forward then, Mr. Maiden, and the presentation.
Yes, the purpose of this new engineer's report is to address drainage issues at 2458 Nye Road, and as well as along Nye Road, we've had flooding issues. This was initiated by the Road Authority under Section 4. It is a new report to prepare a proper outlet for the Stone Mill and Nye Road drainage watershed. This report is to create a new plan and profile along with new assessment schedules for construction and future maintenance work. Notice for this meeting to consider was done in accordance with Section 41.4 of the Ontario Drainage Act. And at this time, we have Mr. John Spreet of Spreet & Associates of London and Mr. Brandon Widner, his associate. I would like Mr. Spreet to give you a brief presentation on the design aspects. This meeting is only really to discuss design aspects, assessments, and that kind of thing will be taken care of at the Court of Revision and or the Tribunal. Thank you.
Before you do that, I wonder if you could just clarify that. So in terms of the work that's being done right now, there is a lengthy schedule with respect to what appear to be assessments in the report that we have.
That is correct, yes.
So that's part of the report and that's part of the work going forward.
That is correct.
But the assessments can be appealed if anyone wishes to the Court of Revision.
Yes, at a later time and date.
Thank you.
And everyone inside the watershed will be notified of that time frame.
Thank you, Mr. Maiden.
Van Spreet.
I started on this project a year or two ago, I believe. Brandon Widner is a young graduate engineer training, so he's here tonight. Notes of the report and the calculations very well because he has the skills to do this. So here tonight because it requires that we have a meeting as an opportunity has been assessed to make or ask questions of clarification with respect to something like we are going to do here. It comes to over the lands and roads in the affected water. Watershed area is 470 hectare. It takes land north of Highway 3 or Garrison Road. It actually accepts runoff from this complex here, which gravity, the water flows through natural water courses down to Long Island Road. So there is another meeting by law, and that has to happen in at least 1 month's time, and that's an opportunity for anybody who's assessed to appeal their assessment, and they will be circulated with whatever appeal. Tonight, if there are staff here tonight, is 770 meters of natural channel improvement. I don't know. We've spoken to some of these folks at a preliminary meeting, but we're looking at Corso, Hunter, Daly, and work on those properties. This act gives us the right to go in there and channel the water away from also putting in a new entrance culvert set up to the auto property. Quite a bit of cost involved for everybody. Anybody in the watershed that is not directly abutting the drain is assessed on a per hectare basis, a small residential lot would. That assessment issue is for another day. So for council to be able to get to that assessment meeting, we have to follow the formalities and the report has to be adopted and a bylaw prepared at some point, and that bylaw is circulated to all the people again on this. That gives them their opportunity to order of revision, which is a considered. So tonight, really, the 770 meters of ditching, and we're talking about two laneway culverts, basically a double pipe installation because of the volume of water for 470. So they are 6 foot diameter pipes, two of them wide. They're very much similar in size to the culvert immediately downstream under Nairo. Costs work back through the assessment board indicates, you know, the total cost of this project, estimated $77,700, and this is going to prevent, give access to the Tallinnado laneway. There's a couple of small pipes there, and at periods of high flow, there's impossible. And House public meeting about December's. Right, that may want to ask questions with respect to what's proposed, and that.
Perfect.
That I think I can give it back to the mayor to say. I guess if you're.
Mr. Spreed, I very much appreciate your comments, and I thought at one point Mr. Whitner was going to get an opportunity to speak, but I see that you've stifled him.
And
he probably did all the work. You're just the pretty face that does the talking.
Well, he's learning. He does a good job, too.
Okay.
This is my last hurrah. I want, when he gets signed up, I'll be retired. And take
well,
the heat.
That's rather disappointing for us. Perhaps you could stay there for a moment. If there are any councillors that have any questions with respect to the report, Mr. Spreed is available to answer them. If not, then I think what we will do is we will ask members of the public if there's anyone here who wishes to address council. We'll see what questions might arise, and then perhaps either you or Mr. Whitner
yes.
can respond. Okay, or Mr. Maiden.
We'll give him a chance next.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So at this stage, members of the public who are here with respect to this matter have heard some of the background, and if any of you would like to come forward and address council, if you have any questions, please do so now. I would ask you to provide your name and address for the record. Please come forward, sir. Mr. Kautz, can you remind us of your address again, please?
Certainly. My name is Charles Kautz, K-A-U-T-Z. I live at 3247 Thunder Bay Road. And I just had two quick questions. One is, after it's a bylaw, is that what makes this a municipal drain? And my second question is, if the engineer did any flow studies to see what kind of volume it comes out to one outlet, maybe on an annual basis or something like that. Thank you.
Mr. Whitner, I wonder if you, or Mr. Spreed, I wonder if you could respond to that, or Mr. Whitner, either one.
Buddy, this was just designed for a five-year storm on our agro-rural runoff factors, and it very similar matches the pipe downstream. That's why the pipes are so large. The existing there is a 750 millimeter and a 600 millimeter pipe. And then it dumps into a 12-foot box. That's why there's two 100-millimeter culverts being proposed.
First question had to do with the what makes this a municipal drain. Is it already part of a municipal drain, or does the bylaw? Okay. So that would the answer to that question by Mr. Kautz would be in the affirmative. Mr. Kautz, you'd have to come up and catch that on the microphone.
I'm sorry, is there any hydraulic studies or I understand the flows and you match it to the one downstream, but is there any kind of studies that you use to measure this watershed and the output down in this corner?
Yeah, we size it based on your watershed area, which is the
right.
dark line. We size it to a 1 in 5 year storm.
Okay, and what might that be, like a 3-inch storm or?
Based on a rainfall data, which is from the provincial. Say it's a 3-inch storm, I can't say that. I'd have to look.
Is it like local rainfall
data?
Yeah,
it's local rainfall data.
Okay.
So theoretically, the pipe should be exceeded 1 in every 5. Being similar that it's matched the road, like if it's exceeded.
Right. And the one road improvement is what they did on Stone Mill Road about 2-3 years ago, that culvert underneath that road? That's the existing double one that you referred to?
Okay, so why don't we do this? Why don't we have you folks speaking through the chair So that
I'm finished. Thank
so you that
you're much.
Focused. Okay, so your question had to do with some similar work done on Stone Mill Road, and Mr. Spreet said that that in fact is correct. It would be similar to that.
Okay, and that's not included in this, obviously.
No,
because that's existing. Okay,
and that doesn't take in the one on Stone Mill. If you look on the map, there's still water coming from the north, which does not get into that one on Stone Mill.
Right. Okay.
So that's why the one on Stone Mill is smaller.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address council with respect to this issue or ask any questions? There being none, then I will declare this public meeting closed and thank both Mr. Spreet and Mr. Whitner and Dave Maiden for the presentation this evening. Thank you. So that takes us to the consent agenda. And are there any reports that anyone wishes removed from the consent agenda? If not, then could I have a motion to move the consent agenda items? Councillor Zanko first. Sorry. Definitely. I'm sure that's right on both counts. Are there any questions of any of the items in the consent agenda package? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just on the report from the tender of the sidewalks.
Report CS06-2016.
IS03-2016 on page 3. I guess my question would go to Mr. Walsh, just on the underneath the financing and staffing implications, it says we budgeted $200,000, and this is quite a bit less. So this, it says here that it will allow addition of sidewalk sections originally identified as part of the 2017 repair to be introduced in 2016. And I'm just curious as to, from other budgeted items, if it comes out under budget, it goes into reserves. And I'm wondering why this on this item here, it wouldn't go into reserves. And then we deal with 2017 and 2017.
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Certainly, if it's council's wishes that we only stick to the approved tender amount, we can do the 2016 program. The feeling I've got from council is that infrastructure is a high priority, and if we have budgeted money and a project comes in under budget, that we should be spending up to the budgeted amount if the contractor will agree to extend their unit prices, and that's what we're suggesting here. So we're taking a portion of the 2017 program, bringing it forward to do in 2016. If we don't spend the money, it will return to reserves.
Councillor Luberts?
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I had a question with respect to report. Sorry. I'm sorry, Councillor Luberts, I didn't see your hand up again.
Yeah, just on the remuneration for council or for the mayor and council and board members.
That's report
CS06-2016. Just for some clarification, we have... underneath the councillors and the mayor, we have remuneration. And then it shows the benefits. And then it shows the travel allowance. And I think it's important that we make it clear to the people in the public that the travel allowance is not something that council submits. It's something that we just receive. And when you look at the report, I think that there's some people out there that are thinking that we're submitting mileage reports and then we're being paid for you know, travel throughout the town for doing council business. And I haven't submitted anything.
Right.
Be remunerated for this amount. And I think it's important that the public knows that this isn't something that council, the councilors submit a bill and are paid back or remunerated for their travel.
That's fair enough, Councillor Lubertson. If one looks at the report and the appendix, I think they would be shocked if in fact councillors were all submitting receipts for exactly the same amount at the end of the year, because they're all the same. But you're correct. It's a monthly allowance that is allocated to each councillor for the travel that they do within the municipality and sometimes without, sometimes outside the municipality to conduct council business.
Okay.
Anything further, Councillor Lubertz?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Councillor Butler.
Your Worship, Councillor Lubertz makes a very good point, and I just want to expand on that because there was a particular point of interest for me as well under expenses, and I wanted to clarify that those aren't expenses that we're actually putting together and submitting, but rather when we attend a conference or a luncheon on behalf of the town to represent the community, those are where the expenses are filtered through as well.
Those you are required, though, to provide some information so that the staff can verify the amounts.
Right, but if the staff is providing that for us, then the staff normally takes care of that. I've never had to put in an expense report, and I've never used any expenses other than representing the town at functions.
Right. In that event, I would suggest that if councillors do wish verification of those numbers, they should take it up to Menage. Just to confirm that, in fact, these are appropriate amounts allocated to you. Anything further, Councillor Butler? Anyone else? Mr. Jansen, Director Jansen, I had a question with respect to the annual investment review, and really just of a general nature. Are we at a point where we have sufficiently large amounts of money that we should be considering some type of professional advice relative to the investment of these monies?
To the mayor, we do solicit quote amounts for different types of various types of investments. We have in the past received submissions from financial institutions in the community with different larger portfolio management parameters, whereby we would be tendering larger amounts for the benefit of having them manage a larger pooled fund together. That is something we're considering later this year, where we'll be putting together something that's standard. A lot of these products are very unique and creative and at times become quite complex in terms of the submissions we get. So we are looking at that possibility later this year.
Much. Are there any other questions with respect to the consent agenda items? If not, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. That then takes us to infrastructure services. Councillor Lubert, I'll hand you the chair.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Infrastructure services is now in session. We have no presentations or delegations, and this time around we do have some reports. First report up is IS-04-2016, the Nye Road Municipal Drain Filing of the Engineer's Report as per Section 4 of the Ontario Drainage Act, RS 1990, CD 17.
So moved.
Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That's carried. Next report, IS-06-2016, request for agreement extension for the Crystal Beach Food Concession Services and request for proposal number ISF-02-2011. Have a mover, Councillor McDermott. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. That brings us to IS-07-2016 update of Town of Fort Erie street lighting policy.
So moved.
Comments or questions, Council Passero? Oh, so moved. All right, okay. Any comments or questions? Councilor McDermott and Councilor Butler.
Yes, through you to Mr. Walsh. I know there's been, you've had a chat with Councilor Passero with regards to a request from the Bridgeport BIA with regards to a light on the municipal lot. Could you shed some light on that?
Yes, through you, Mr. Chair. I believe the Bridgeport BIA in their drive to set up a farmer's market off Jarvis Street is utilizing the municipal parking lot. Members of the community, I'm drawing a blank. Members of the community at night are not feeling safe with that parking lot because of the lack of any lighting in that. And I believe the BIA through Councillor Passero has requested a street light. We're going to take it to the committee, and as it's a municipal owned lot, it's not private, obviously. We'll take a look at it from a safety point of view, and if so, we'll install a street light there.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair Lubert. Through you to Mr. Walsh, just wanted to follow up with the street light that we had spoken about off of Burley and Grove, and if that's still going to be considered an addition to this.
Through you, Mr. Chair, that street light should have been an application through to our TCC. Ms. Stout has the forms. That was a mid-block improvement on, I'm sorry, I forget the street right now.
Grove. It's Grove.
Are you talking about the one on the corner or the one on the
There's one that block? Is not functioning, and then we were going to put an application for a secondary light.
All right, through you, Mr. Chair. Can we talk offline after the meeting about this? I'm mixed up right now.
Any other comments or questions, Councilor Mayor Redekop?
Thank you, Councilor Luberts. With respect to the repair of light fixtures or poles, kind of looks like we're going backwards. This new policy proposes within 28 days, and I'm just wondering why it would need to be that length of time when up until now it says the report indicates that the target has been 14 to 20 days. I'm wondering why it would need to be extended to within 28 days.
Mr. Walsh.
Through you, Mr. Chair. I don't believe our current policy speaks to any time frames with respect to repair. We do follow minimum maintenance standards, which is very, very loose and not quite acceptable to the level of service I would expect as a ratepayer for the town of Fort Erie. A 28-day cycle from notice to or a complaint from the resident to notification of our future contractor to actual repair, I think, is a reasonable amount of time. And again, that's a maximum amount of time.
The director is correct, Councilor Lubert, in the sense that the report doesn't say that there's a specific policy now, but it says that historically these repairs have been done within 14 to 28 days. So it may be that there are occasions when it would be days would be required, but it doesn't appear that we're really stretching ourselves if we set 28 days as the target. I don't know. It may very well be that 28 days is what is required, but if that's the case, then why would we be able to do it in 14 days historically, or at least on some occasions? So I'm just wondering whether between now and next week when the bylaw is going to be prepared, if we couldn't take a further critical look at that to see whether that could be tightened up. I wonder if the director of Infrastructure Services has any comment on that, or am I completely out to lunch?
Well, I don't think you're completely out of line, but I'm just thinking that the 28 days, if they give themselves a window, historically, they have repairs have been done before the 28 days. I think that's what it's trying to explain. So we are within the 14 days, but I don't know that we want to squeeze it to the point where you only have 14 days.
Not necessarily suggesting that, Mr. Chair. What I'm suggesting is that if historically we've been able to do it between 14 and 28 days, and that hasn't really been codified anyplace, it's just something that we've been able to do, we're now establishing a policy, and this policy is going to say you've got 28 days to do it. Maybe it's just me. Maybe if I'm given 28 days, I'm going to scurry like a wild man on days 26, 27, 28 to get it done. But I'm just wondering if the director couldn't maybe take a look at this to see whether we could target 21 days. Obviously, in 90% of the time, we will try to get it done within 21 days, or 75 or 80% of the time, something similar to what's done in the planning department or building department with respect to applications or that type of thing, so that we've got a bit of a turnaround time that actually stretches us. And I see that Mr. Walsh would like to chime
in. Yes, Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. I understand what you're saying, Mr. Mayor. The 28 days is an absolute limit. Obviously, we're going to try to exceed that. One of the benefits of the program we're undertaking right now, the LED replacement program, is that we expect very few outages. Depending, as you see in the report, we're going to issue a contract shortly for continual repair of these streetlights. One of the issues that's going to come up is how frequently the contractor can visit the town if they're not local. And we don't expect very many visits. So giving us a 1 month window or a 4 week window would, it's not going to get you to a critical mass, but it's better to come and do two streetlights at once than one. So it's more of a business point of view for the future.
That's good. And just one final comment. I suppose since we've been moving towards, performance measurements with respect to the things that we're doing, perhaps this is an area as well that we could be doing some measurements over a period of a couple of years, see what how frequently we do have to repair lights and what our performance is with respect to that. And then if there's an adjustment that's possible, fine. If not, we've got our policy and we've got our performance measurements. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Any further, Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Chair Lubberts. Through you to Mr. Walsh. With regards to the ongoing conversion to LED streetlights, could you just comment on what the quality control check is going to be when they're all completed and how long the initial installation vendor will be responsible for maintaining any lights that malfunction, don't work properly? And third part of that question is, do citizens just call in the town number to report that through our customer service system?
Mr. Wells?
For you, Mr. Chair, I'll take these questions backwards. Yes, they call in to 871-1600 to report an outage. The warranty on the new LED program is 10 years on the fixture. The conundrum comes up if there's an outage is who's responsible? Is it the light that's manufacturing, or is it the potentially substandard electrical system, which is owned by CNP, behind it? So there's going to be some give and take on defining fault for any fixtures that are out. And the first question. Oh, thank you. Yes.
Drive around and make sure they're all working.
During installation, we have one of our construction supervisors monitoring construction. After everything's installed, we have road patrols that occasionally go out at night to ensure that streetlights are working. We still certainly, in this case, our best sources of information are the homeowners themselves. So if a streetlight is out, I fully encourage a phone call in.
Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Chair Lubitz. Thank you, Mr. Walsh, for your explanation. I just want the community to understand that this is their investment as well, and the sooner we report outages, things like that, the better quality control we'll get, and the more ability we'll have to hold the installation teams to making sure they all fix before they pull out and go somewhere else.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Mr. Walsh and his team, just more of a comment. I do have some constituents who have had the replacement of LED, and I've received some very positive comments with regard to the lighting and the brightness. So kudos, because I think it is making residents very happy. And further to what Councillor Nutt said, it is an investment, and we've already received some positive feedback, so that's a very good thing.
Any other comments or questions? Just to follow up myself from what Councillor Zanko was alluding to, the fact that a lot of positive comments are coming from the residents. I was driving home the other night, and one of the things that I noticed, it was nice to see that the lights were all the same color. And throughout the town, we have some white lights, we have some yellow lights. And I'm just wondering, I guess, Mr. Walsh, if you may be able to answer this, you may not, but is it possible that we can talk with, I think the region has some street lights in town that they're responsible for. I don't know if Niagara Parks, but is it possible that we have the street lights all the same color in the future?
Through this program, Councillor, both the region and the Parks Commission lights are being swapped out as well. The only ones we don't have any control over, and you can imagine the frustration sometimes, is the MTO lights.
And we'll get Mayor Redekop to deal with the MTO on them. Thank you.
As soon as I figure out, how much time do I have, 28 days?
Yes. 14 days.
Standards.
Thanks. Yes.
Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed. That is carried. That brings us to new business and inquiries. Any inquiries, Councillor Zanko?
You got to be someplace tonight.
Oh, all right. Oh, you moved us along to the. All right. We're in corporate services now?
We're getting there.
All right. Okay. I changed chairs before the deadline. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to Mr. Walsh. Just a couple of questions with regard to the pothole maintenance. Obviously, we've had some very, very rainy days, and a lot of my constituents are calling because it seems that there's pothole fixing, and then we get significant rainfall, which it seems to only last for a few days. So my first question is, if you could perhaps describe the plan for our constituents. Is there a system in place that you have a crew that drives around to check maintenance, or is this complaint-driven? I'm just wondering if you can give an overview of this process for our residents listening in.
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Councillor. Through you, Mr. Chair. Our pothole inspection procedure is a two-part process, essentially. We undertake road patrols as legislated, and depending on the road class, a class three road, one of our busier roads, gets inspected every 7 days. A class four is every 14 days. A class five is every 30 days. Class six roads have no legislated standard for inspection. However, we do treat them as class five roads. When we note a pothole or a repair requirement that's greater than the minimum maintenance standards, it goes on to a list and everything is repaired within that. Threes are a 7-day repair period. Fours are a 14-day. Fives are a 30-day period. That's to meet the minimum maintenance standards. If we get a call or if we notice other potholes when we're patrolling, they also go on a list. And we have a general rule of thumb at this time of year that if a pothole could create a tripping hazard, if you were walking down the middle of the road, don't ask me why, but it goes on the list. And at that, we attack the oldest potholes first. So it's a top-down list. But again, we try and focus on areas and road classes in that procedure. I would like to add that we have very few repairs that are beyond our minimum maintenance standards. As much as the roads seem very, very bad, and they are, don't get me wrong, but they're not exceeding minimum maintenance standards in terms of repair. So we're ahead on that point, but there are a lot out there. We have four crews out right now on pothole. So essentially, when you phone in and request a pothole repair, it goes on the list and it goes on the bottom of the list. And as potholes get repaired, the list gets shorter, hopefully.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Thank you. And
Councilor Zanko,
just one further
fair?
Question. Yes, it is very fair response, and I appreciate you letting everyone know that. One other question through you, Mr. Chair, if that's okay. When you had mentioned that the oldest potholes get repaired first, and I'm just going to give you an example, and perhaps the Director of Infrastructure could help myself and our constituents understand. In some occasions, there may be three potholes side by side. And at times, you know, my constituents have noticed that perhaps two of the potholes may be filled and the third one won't. Could you just explain the reasoning behind that?
Mr. Walsh.
Through you, Mr. Chair. Without knowing the exact situation, you would hope that they would get repaired. Sometimes the description of the pothole from the ratepayers is somewhat exaggerated. And as I said, our focus right now is to get potholes about a foot in diameter or 8 inches in diameter repaired first. If we were to repair every pothole out there, it'd take years. Focusing on the heavy stuff first. I can look into the situation. I think I know the road you're talking about. And get back to you later on that.
Thank you.
Is that it, Councilor Zanko?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Mayor Redekop?
Yeah, just with respect to the road classifications, do we have any response times that we try to attain? So if we've got a Class 3 road, we don't have one or two, we have three, four, five?
Mr. Walsh?
We don't have one or two.
We have five, I believe. Five Class 3 roads are...
Okay, but we have Class 3 roads. So as an example, if I might, Mr. Chair, we have a Class 3 road with a pothole. We get notified of it. Do we have any standard where we try to repair that within a certain period of time?
Through you, Mr. Chair. Through our... If it's exceeding minimum maintenance standards and we try and hold the same standard to a call-in pothole, we'll say... Class 3s are 7 days. We try and get at them every 7 days.
Are we maintaining statistics with respect to that so that when we do our measurements, we're going to be able to have some information relative to that, Mr. Chair?
Who else?
Without combing through the data, I do not believe we track how fast we repair potholes upon notification or noticing them. The list I received today from our road supervisor, the longest time is 11 days right now. So most of that would be developed through our own road patrols.
Chair, I wonder when you have your next business subcommittee meeting with respect to infrastructure services, maybe you could look at whether there's a possibility of establishing some type of response times with respect to Class 3 roads, different in 4 and 5. 7 days, that may be reasonable. It may not be. I don't know, but perhaps you could look into that.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
We'll take a note of that, and I think Mr. Walsh is making a note of that as well. Any other inquiries under new business? Seeing none, that takes us to the business status report. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, infrastructure services is now in recess. I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. That then takes us to corporate and community services, and that would be Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is now opened. We don't have any presentations or delegations this evening, so that will bring us to report CAO 04-LC-05-2016, and Councillor Butler has a conflict of interest. So if I could just confirm with Madam Chair, because this report is for information purposes, should we just remove the piece that Councillor Butler has a conflict with, or should she declare on the whole report?
No, she...
Through you, Madam Chair. You said Madam Chair instead of Madam Clerk, so I wasn't entirely sure, but I had a feeling you were after me. I think we can just move the minutes attached, save and accept that one portion as we've done before.
Okay. Can I get a mover for Your Worship?
So that's as the clerk has said, the report minus item 3, sub 6.
Yes. Is the one. Are there any questions or comments with the report, Your Worship?
I did want to mention that in terms of the item 1, sub 2, which relates to part of Winger Road, Councillor Nutt has spoken to me about this. I know that he's spoken to the individual who is interested in trying to acquire part of the road allowance. I will be meeting with him, and I think it's scheduled for sometime latter part of next week, just to maybe flesh this out a bit further. So I don't want council to be left with the impression that that's a dead issue. That's still a somewhat live issue, at least for now.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions, Councillor Roberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. On page 2 of the minutes, the actual minutes, Part 3, under Bay Beach Woods subdivision. Is that the subdivision in behind Schooley Road with the road allowance off of Rebstock? Am I looking
at right? Mooney Hetram. It's the Mooney Hetram subdivision. Beautiful. North of...
Smalls Road? Is that the one? Yes? All right, okay. Just a couple of, when I'm reading in the minutes, it said something about the letter of credit and that we're thinking of conveying two lots to the town instead of the letter of credit. And I'm just wondering, is that normal policy for the town? I'm not comfortable with something like this. I don't think that we as a council or we as a town should be in the business of, you know, swapping out lots and doing different things. We have a policy in place for development, and there's a letter of credit that needs to be established. And, you know, are we setting a precedence here so that, you know, all developers can say, well, instead of giving you the money, let's just swap some land here and there. And, you know, I mean, I wasn't happy with the land swap that we just did on Lakeshore. And I'm just nervous that we could get ourselves into a bind where we're not getting the value back if we had to sell. So I don't know who would comment on that, but.
If I might, Madam Chair, and then if Mr. Brady wants to comment as well, that would be helpful. The two lots is really security. It would be held as security. So instead of a letter of credit, it would be the two lots. And that's at the request of the individual who's been trying to develop this subdivision now for probably a dozen years or more. Got a number of lots. I think he has 5 houses in the subdivision. I believe there are lots still that could be developed. These lots, it's a beautiful subdivision that he's set up. And these lots have a value that would equal whatever his security requirements would be. He just doesn't have the cash, but he does have those lots. So it's not the typical procedure that we would follow, but we're trying to encourage and facilitate the development there of what looks like a very nice subdivision if the owner can get over a couple of hurdles. So at that point, maybe Mr. Brady could supplement whatever I've said.
Mr. Brady?
Through to Councilor Lubert. Yes, this is unusual. We don't normally do this. The value of the letter of credit, it would be well exceeded by the value of 2 lots in this area. So the town is protected in that respect. But it certainly is an unusual situation, and it came about as a request from the developer. And as the mayor has pointed out, there are 24 or more lots that are there, and the other opportunity would be for the gentleman to simply sell the lots, but he seems to wish to control the development of the type of housing that goes on in the subdivision, and therefore he wants to create brick bungalows, I believe is the style he wants to facilitate through development, and he's asked us for this. So if council doesn't want us to pursue this, that's fine. Then the direction should be given to us to simply use the letter of credit.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Brady. I guess maybe my next question is, maybe if I could get a better explanation of what happens with the letter of credit. Someone, the developer submits the letter of credit. Does he get that money back?
Mr. Brady?
Through you to Councilor Lubert. A letter of credit is posted by a developer to ensure that certain items in the subdivision agreement are completed. In this case, the items are secondary items, such as sidewalks, curb cuts, and those kinds of things. Things that cannot be done right now because the subdivision isn't at a stage that we would want to put those in because they'd probably be damaged as houses were constructed. So we hold the letter of credit, and if the developer does what they have said that they would do, we return the letter of credit, usually in pieces, not usually all at the same time, but as they do certain works, they ask and we send them a pieces of their letter of credit. What we would do with the lots is we would simply hold the lots, and if the work is not done, we would sell the lots and use that money to do the work.
Councilor Lubert?
Yes, thank you very much. Like I said, I'm not comfortable with doing this. How are we going to avoid this becoming a standard or setting a precedence with other developers saying, well, you allowed this person, why can't you allow us? Is there a problem with a letter of obtaining a letter of credit?
Mayor Redekamp?
There is in this particular circumstance. And it would be, I think, far easier and probably better for most developers to maintain control of all of the land within their subdivision. And many of the larger developers have access to letters of credit. It's not a problem for them. It's really security for the municipality in the event the developer doesn't do what he's supposed to do. This particular owner has an issue with respect to financing the construction of houses. As Brady has said, he would like to maintain control of the quality of houses that are going into the subdivision, so he really doesn't want to be selling lots so that some other builders can put them up because he's concerned that they may not match the quality that he's looking for. So this is an unusual situation. I don't anticipate that many developers would want to go this route, But you know what? If they did, we're looking for security. The town of Fort Erie is looking for security. So if we own these lots and the developer didn't or defaulted in work that he's supposed to do, we would sell the lots. We would have the money. And as Mr. Brady has said, when the staff calibrates this, we're going to make sure that the lots exceed the value or the amount of letter of credit that would otherwise be required, so that we're well protected. So we talked about this. This has been discussed a number of times. We've met with the owner a couple of times. So this seems to be the best way to try to kickstart this to facilitate an owner. But if other developers were inclined to put forward this type of proposal and we had more than adequate security, I don't know that it would be problematic for me. It could be. There may be some downsides. I don't know. But this seems to be a good opportunity for us to facilitate this particular development.
Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. I guess maybe I could get some help from Mr. Luzdick. Number one, how does this stop? How do we avoid having this become a precedence? First of all, that's a question that needs to be answered. And secondly, if there's a problem with obtaining a letter of credit, obviously there's some financial problems there. What happens if there's a default in finances outside of us owning these lots? Now we own some lots that are we going to get tied up in that there problem with this development if there's a problem that we can't even sell these lots because it becomes litigation?
Mr. Letzig?
Thank you. For you too, Councilor Lubbers. Your first question, I guess the easiest way to answer that is to say that if you say no and indicate that you will not accept this and you will not accept any other similar applications, you won't have a otherwise, people can come forward and make in the future. Are you not hearing me? Oh, okay. I didn't know what you were pointing to there. So hopefully that covers the first point. The second point, we would expect that we would get clear title to the lots so that we would own the lots without any encumbrances or without any question with respect to our ability to transfer the lots in the event that there was a default. So that if we did obtain those lots in that fashion, that is free and clear and without any encumbrances or restrictions, then we should be able to sell the lots. And whatever else happens in the subdivision or with respect to this individual wouldn't have any impact on our ability to sell the lots. So that would be the way that we would proceed, because as has been pointed out, this is just another form of money. A letter of credit is a commitment by a financial institution to provide the holder of the letter, in this case the town, with money in the event of a default. And these lots would be another form of currency, shall we say. It's land, it's real property. So that to the extent that you can sell it, and you can sell it for the value that exceeds what you've asked for in the letter of credit, you shouldn't have a difficulty. I personally can't tell you whether these lots are worth what the letter of credit calls for. I don't know that. And presumably before this is done, if it is done, that's going to be settled. And I can tell you that as a condition of obtaining title to these, we would make sure that they weren't encumbered in any fashion that would prevent us from selling them if we needed to.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair, if I may go back to Mr. Brady. So if we allow this to happen through this year, is that where we're headed? We will have clear title to all these two lots, and they're gonna. And so to get clear title, there's certain expenses that need to be paid, and they're going to come up. And is that going to be paid by the developer? And I mean, I'm protecting us, the corporation, and the residents of the town. I'm sorry about this developer having financial problems or whatever, and he can't get a letter of credit, but we have to make sure that we own the lots without any problem. We have clear title. And are we going to make sure that that's what happens?
Mr. Brady, can you comment on that?
Certainly, to Councilor Lubert. If council approves what is on the land committee minutes this evening, a letter would go back to this developer that would be vetted through Mr. Lustig, and it would outline that the municipality accepts the offer of ownership of two lots and that all costs associated with that transfer would be paid for by the developer. It would also outline some timelines in terms of our ownership of these lands to allow us to be able to sell them on the open market.
Councilor Lubert, anything further?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Councilor Nett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to ask the clerk, does approval of the minutes bar myself for asking for additional information or deliberation on the subject in regards to the Winger Road property? I know that the mayor had said it's an ongoing issue, but I want to know if approving these minutes removes the ability to ask for future information.
You can ask for information through the chair at any time on any subject matter, Councillor.
Thank you.
Councillor Lubert, providing there's no other councillors. Okay, Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Excuse me, I forgot to ask the question. Another item in the minutes, exact same page. The next item that was up, outstanding parks and open space, the first one there, Flintlock Bay property. It said the CAO noted that there was some additional questions were received regarding the waterfront strategy. And I'm just wondering what those questions were regarding Flintlock Bay.
Mr. Crooked?
Through you, Chair, to the Councillor. Yeah, just to give you a little history there, we did receive some questions from the owners of Flintlock back in late 2015, which I was formalizing a response to. But as a result of the recent waterfront strategy meetings that have been going on, the owners had additional questions that they would like answered. I don't have those in front of me presently. I'd be happy to share those questions with council, but like I say, I don't have them in front of me.
Mayor Renica?
Just in response to this, I believe that we're trying to arrange to meet with Mr. Couts and Mr. Whitner, and I think that may be something that my secretary is trying to arrange for next week. Does that ring any bells, Mr. Couts? Sorry. Are you familiar with that? So that's being worked on, and I think we're trying to target the end of next week.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any additional comments or questions? Seeing none, I will call the question. All those in favor? That report carries. Mayor Redicott?
I move item 3-6 of those.
Yes, thank you. Are there any questions with regard to item 3-6 of these minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, that carries. That brings us to report COS 01-2016. Can I have a mover? Councillor Luberts? Are there any questions or comments? Mayor Redicott?
I'm sorry to say that there are some questions, and I want to start by saying that I want to commend the clerk for the amount of work that she's put into this and the amount of thought that she's put into these revisions. I had an opportunity very briefly to meet with her this afternoon just to go over some of the items that I've got on my lengthy list. I've checked some off, but I'd like to be able to go through some others. I have some reservations of a minor nature with respect to some of these things. Some of the changes that are proposed, I think, are excellent. My only concern is, and I've mentioned this both now to the clerk and to the lawyer, that process is very important. My whole occupation, 40 years, has been based on process. But I also appreciate how process can prevent progress. So we want to move things forward. We don't want to be bound by unnecessary process. However, having said that, if I could start with page 5 of the report, and what I have left is the stuff about the notice of motion, and we had talked about this, and Part of my predicament is, with respect to this, is, and I think, Madam Clerk, perhaps you can comment on this, if I might, Madam Chair, is when someone gives notice of motion, it's very often unlikely that the full wording of what is going to be put forth as a motion is then available. I think it's the intent, and I believe when we get to the rules actually speak of the intent of the motion. Is that correct?
Madam Clerk?
Through you, Chair, all I can offer is the experience from the municipality I came from, in which case I never had the example of what I've seen in Fort Erie, which is that just the general intent was given. It was always the formal wording being complete when notice was given.
So here's my conundrum and my concern about process interfering with our ability to move items forward. We have a delegation. There's clearly something new that's being presented to us. You know, any counselor feels that there's something that maybe we can do. It's appropriate that that notice of motion be given. It's highly unlikely, it's possible, that what the delegate has asked for is so crystal clear that whichever counselor wants to put the notice of motion forward is able to write it out and say, "Here, Madam Clerk, I've got the notice of motion. This is the way it's going to appear when it comes before council 2 weeks hence." That's highly unlikely. But the intent may be very clear that the delegate wants to do something or other to move this forward. So if I can look, I think notice of motion is covered in paragraph 14.1. Right. So 14.1b says notice of motion is a verbal introduction of intent to council to consider a motion at the next regular council meeting. I think that's quite correct. The report says that we shouldn't be giving notice of motion until we've got the full-blown wording. I think that slows us down, number one, and number two, I don't think it's necessary, as long as the intent is sufficiently clear. Next sentence, when notice is provided, the motion is not to be spoken to or discussed until the next regular meeting of council after the motion has been duly moved and seconded. That, to me, is problematic. I had a chat with the clerk about this. She's trying to capture something that I think is difficult. What she means by this is that once notice of motion is given, you really don't have a debate at the council meeting where the notice of motion is given. You don't have debate until the motion actually comes before council in the form of a motion or whatever. Hence, this sentence, in my opinion, would preclude another councillor saying to the person who's just given notice of motion, "Could we also add something or other?" Or, "Could you just clarify what it is you've got in mind?" So I may be parsing this a little too tightly, but I don't think that we should have the second sentence in paragraph 14.1b in our procedural bylaw. because I think it creates a predicament for us. The third sentence says, the motion shall be provided in writing to the clerk for inclusion in the next agenda. And that's fine. That's exactly what happens. The next subparagraph, which is C, if the motion for which notice is given is not moved at the next regular meeting or is withdrawn voluntarily by the minutes, by the member who gave notice, the clerk shall remove the motion from the agenda. This raised in me the issue of the notice of motion relative to the Niagara Parks Marina, which you'll recall when first given, wasn't given for the next meeting. It was given for, I think, a month hence. It was tied as at that time to some events that were going to be taking place at the Parks Commission meetings. And then it was adjourned a couple of times at my request, or postponed, I guess we would now call it, at my request before it was eventually dealt with. This wording doesn't actually provide for that. It suggests that if you don't do it at the next regular meeting, you have to hold off giving notice. I think it's better to give notice in advance. And the clerk was puzzled by that, and I think that doesn't appreciate the, I don't want to put words in her mouth. I think that she was thinking that my thinking was political, that heaven forbid I'm on a council and I'm going to be political. I used to have a counselor that used to say, let's not make this political. Well, it is political. We're all here. And there's strategy behind the things that we do, particularly in some cases, notices of motion. In that particular notice of motion, there was a strategy. We're waiting to see whether the Parks Commission was going to be proceeding in a particular direction. And if they did, fine. Because then there was another milepost that we were keeping our eye on. And then eventually we did move the motion, was carried. And in fact, it does have an impact because it sends the message to the Parks Commission that we want this process to keep moving forward. And we're looking at the large resort opportunity. So just to come back, I think the wording in subsection C needs to be clarified. And Madam Chair, I'm wondering if the clerk agreement with me on that, or feels that this wording is adequate. Well, let me not say that. And I have the assurance of the clerk that she would look at this between now and next Monday when the bylaw comes forward, in the event that there could be some clarification of the wording.
Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It would be helpful if I was given direction at this point in time. I feel that the wording is clear, and if I might, in reference to the report, I realize that you can just give intent when you want to give notice. That's what Robert's Rules allows. In my report, my wording is, it is strongly encouraged that notice be given only when the final wording of the motion is available, and that is simply to provide clarity to the public and to the other members of council so they know exactly what the notice of motion's intent is. If you have your whereas points and your that point all nutted out, it's much more clear for people to understand what the purpose of that notice of motion is. However, you are able to simply give the intent and then have the final wording prepared for the next agenda for everyone to consider. The purpose of the wording chosen in section 14.1 is to aid the public in knowing when an item of interest will be before council so that they may choose to attend the meeting, for example, or so that they have the full wording in front of them and can potentially plan their schedules if it's something that they're interested in that they'd like to either speak to councillors about or be present at the meeting for.
Thank you. So I would like to move that we amend, if it's appropriate at this time, that we amend the wording of 14.1c so that it says, if the motion for which notice was given is not moved at the regular meeting designated or is withdrawn, etc. So in other words, it doesn't have to be the next regular meeting. It can be the regular meeting that is designated in the notice. 2 meetings from now, a month and a half from now, what have you, just so that it's clear. It could be the next meeting, but it doesn't have to be. So I'd like to move on.
That amendment's now on the floor. Is there any questions or comments with the amendment? Councillor Lubritz.
I'm going to support the amendment, but I think we need to make it clear that if you're going to give a notice of motion, and then it's going to be, well, maybe a month from now or something's going to happen, then the notice of motion will come forward. We have to make sure that you're not putting a notice of motion forward, and then if the events turn out that you don't need the notice of motion, you're just going to cancel the notice of motion. I don't have a problem with if it's not at the next meeting, but postponing it, one postponement, maybe two postponements, but I don't think that we can just keep postponing it indefinitely. You either call the motion or you, if you give notice of motion, you bring the notice forward. And if your intent is to wait and just keep postponing it and then maybe one day dropping it, then we can't just have amendments to or have extensions to them and not have a timeline of when they're going to be there. So I understand what you're saying, and I support the motion, but I don't want to get ourselves bound down and bogged up and holding up for 2 months.
I think that's easily remedied if there is a notice of motion and it keeps, and the mover keeps asking for it to be postponed. At some point, council may decide that the majority don't want to have it further postponed, and it's either going to be dealt with or simply withdrawn. But it clearly could be withdrawn because that's provided for in the balance of the wording in C. So I hear what you're saying, but I think we can manage that as well.
Anything further, Councilor Roberts?
No.
Okay. I'll call the question. All those in favor? That carries. That brings us back to the report as amended. Councilor Roberts?
Yes, just to follow up on the...
Oh, I'm
not done yet.
Oh, you're not done?
Have I hit my 10 minutes?
No, you haven't.
I have 20 minutes.
You do still have the floor.
All right.
Sorry, Councilor Roberts, I'm jumping ahead of myself as well.
All right. Well, we're all following Council Passero's lead.
Mayor Redekop, you do have the floor.
So why don't I deal with 14.1b, the second line, the one that says that we're not supposed to be talking about that. I just think that that's, I think it's confusing wording, and I think that we should remove the second line. So I'm going to move that we remove the second line in 14.1b. Sorry, the second sentence. We'll do this one. So we have to do them one at a time.
That amendment on the floor. Are there any comments or questions? Councilor Roberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. That is exactly where I was going when I interrupted the mayor. Looking at that, and when I was reading that, what I got out of that was you gave a notice of motion, and now you can't even call the councilor after the meeting to discuss it. I think that there is something I didn't agree with, and I thought, oh, we should be able to discuss it and talk about it. Well, what is the intent and all the other things? But I think what the clerk is trying to provide here is that when you bring your notice of motion forward, the notice of motion is brought forward, but it's not debated at that meeting. Maybe that is something that we could put in there and still have it in there that it's not debated or discussed at that meeting, and it's only debated and discussed when the motion is actually put on the floor. Maybe something like that. I don't know if we want to delete it completely.
Mayor Redekop?
I do, because it's a notice of motion, and it's clear that we can't vote on the notice of motion unless there was a motion to waive the procedural rules and permit that notice of motion to be dealt with at the council meeting at which it's presented. I don't believe we've done that this term of council, and I really don't think that it's a good route for us to go. But so we're not going to be voting on it. There isn't going to be debate about it, because whoever the chair of the meeting is, whether it's me or whether it's someone else, is going to recognize that This is a notice of motion. It's nothing to debate. My only concern is that it can't be clarified, number one. If added to, there couldn't be some discussion about it. And number two, as Councillor Lubberts has said, this technically does prevent councillors from talking about it until it comes before council as a motion. And I know that that's not what the clerk intended, but that's really what it could be interpreted to mean. I think if we take it out, so far it hasn't been in. We haven't had any problems with notices of motion.
Any further questions or comments? I'll call the question on the amendment. All those in favor? That carries. You do still have the floor, Your Worship.
I'm willing to give it up for someone else to speak.
Does any other members of council have any questions regarding the report as amended? Councillor Lubberts?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just a question to the clerk. We're on no timetable as far as we can amend the rules of procedure as we're going along. There might be some of these changes that once we actually exercise them, we could see a problem, and we can amend at that time too and make changes. This isn't something that we can do twice a year or once a year. We can do any time we want. Is that correct?
Madam Clerk, could you confirm that?
For you, Madam Chair, that is absolutely correct. It are the council rules of procedure. That means council decides on the bylaw being put into place, and if they choose to amend anything at any time, that is their will.
Anything further?
No, thank you.
And there is no additional questions, so I will, yes, Mayor Redicott.
So the clerk just pointed out to me that when we made the change to 14.1C to talk about the designated meeting or whatever the word was, that the second line in 14.1B makes reference to the next regular council meeting. So there needs to be consistency. So that should also be amended to say, was it the designated meeting? Instead of the next regular council meeting, should be the designated council meeting. At the designated council meeting. So I would move to...
Okay. That amendment's on the floor. Is there any comments or questions? All those in favor? That also carries. You still have the floor, Your Worship.
I did, and... I might just go through these. I had a question about, it's on page 16 of the package, which would be paragraph 4.7F. It has to do with members, it's called members to self-regulate. So when we're in a closed meeting, it says that we're supposed to ensure that we only deal with the business that the closed session notice says we're going to deal with. And I'm just wondering what the concern the clerk may have with respect to that. That's what we've done historically. There's a reason, presumably, for this being included now.
Madam Clerk?
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair, there's no particular reason for that. It's just in consulting other procedural bylaws, some efficient wording that I thought would be helpful given the Ombudsman's increased presence, if you will, starting of this year, just to remind Council of that onus.
Okay, thank you. The next item had to do with paragraph 9.3. A. I'm wondering about the change in wording from what we have had to what is now being proposed. I'm wondering what the clerk, what the clerk's view of the distinction is.
Madam Clerk?
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair, just to clarify, this is 9.3A that used to say speak to a matter other than that stated in the request.
Yes.
With the change to speak to a matter other than the subject matter identified in the request. Simply a clarification of the wording that when a delegation requests to speak, we do ask them to identify what their subject matter is, and therefore they should not be deviating from that when they present to council.
I'm not sure that there's much of a distinction in the wording. I'm going to make an issue of it. Then I'm at 13C. And the clerk and I had an opportunity to chat about this, and basically, so instead of having a separate response to inquiries item on the agenda, that simply becomes part of the new business and inquiries section. And I asked her, well, how will we know if there's a response? There'll be a paper response. So if there was an inquiry made meeting 2 weeks ago and there's a response to come forward at the council meeting next week, I'll be given, or somebody, whoever the chair is, will be given a copy of, I guess maybe we'll all get a copy of the written response, which will tune whoever's chairing the meeting into asking the appropriate director to provide that response. So I'm okay with that. I think that's helpful. Then I was on next page. No, we dealt with that. Wait a minute. 14.8C, motion to amend. We had decided, I think, that when there's an amendment to a motion or a resolution, that we would ask the clerk to read that amendment so that it's clear to all of us. This change says instead of will, may, and I really think it should say will. But I'm wondering what the clerk's rationale for changing would be.
Madam Clerk?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My rationale for changing that is simply because it didn't always happen. So the moment the chair forgets or doesn't go to the clerk to read any amended motion because it might be clear already to council, this just allows us not to be in contravention of the rules of procedure, because by using the word will, that means every time you have an amended motion, the clerk must read it. But that isn't historically what happens.
I wonder if I could ask Councillor Lubberts what he thinks.
Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Yes, I agree with the clerk. For instance, we're making a bunch of amendments now on this report. The clerk would have to read all the amendments and the whole amendment over again, and we don't have time for that. She worked hard enough and long enough putting this report together, so... But I think for the motion at the beginning of a report, I think that's what we're talking about when we make amendments to that, we add that or we delete this or that, then we can read the whole motion out. But I agree with the clerk. Mayor Redekop, okay. I hope you agree with us.
Yeah, I do agree, and that's why I asked. I wanted to get...
And I actually see Madam Clerk's hand up there just to respond to Councilor Lubert, so if it's okay with you, Your Worship.
Of course.
Thank you. Just quickly, Madam Chair, if it's any consolation, at my first draft, I actually removed the entire sentence because it's sort of a given that at any time, if any member of council wants clarity, that of course the clerk or the chair or another member of council that put an amendment forward would certainly read it aloud for that purpose. Thank you.
Mayor Redekop, you have the floor.
Thank you. So I get what the clerk said when Councillor Nutt said maybe it should state that. I wonder if we could get clarification on that.
Can I clarify? Instead of it saying, see, the clerk may read aloud, couldn't we propose a friendly amendment and change that to any member of council may ask the clerk to read an amended motion aloud?
Madam Clerk?
Read it back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Without getting bogged down with too much detail, as I said, it's a given that if there's ever any request for a motion to be read, certainly that can happen.
So I'm on the next one, which is friendly amendment. And the only comment that I would make is that ordinarily when a friendly amendment is made, both the mover and seconder generally agree to the friendly amendment. This provides for the mover, and I know with the clerk and I discussed this, but I do think that it should say the mover and the seconder. Otherwise, if either the mover or the seconder don't consider it friendly, then there would have to be a formal motion to amend. So I'm going to move that we include seconder in 14.3 in the fourth line, fifth line. Says the mover and the seconder of the main action.
That amendment's on the floor. Is there any questions or comments? All those in favor? That carries.
I still have the floor.
You do.
Okay, so I'm now at 14.12, it's with reference to call the question, and on page 26, this would be sub. B says a motion to call the question requires a two-thirds majority vote. Maybe I could get some clarification from the clerk on this. My recollection or my understanding had always been that the motion to call the question can be passed on a majority vote. But have we been operating on a two-thirds majority? 14.12. B, motion to call the question. Says it requires two-thirds majority vote. I always operated on the premise that it was a majority.
Madam Clerk?
Through you, Madam Chair, without having it at my fingertips, which I could have shortly, it is simply what is required in Robert's rules. So for consistency purposes, I wrote it into the procedural bylaw.
Perhaps between now and next week when the bylaw is passed, if that's what Robert's rules says, that's fine. But if it doesn't, we could perhaps amend that to a majority, which does get me to the next one, which I think is clearly incorrect, and that is reconsideration. It doesn't make reference to the fact that a motion to reconsider has to be carried by a two-thirds majority. And that, I think, is pretty standard. But there's nothing that indicates what it takes to pass a motion to reconsider. Do you have a comment from the clerk on that?
And that's just to clarify 16.1.
Yes, sorry.
Madam Clerk?
I'm sorry, through you, Madam Chair, if the question could be repeated, I'd appreciate
yes.
it.
My understanding, and I think it's standard, and I think Robert's rules makes reference to it, is that a motion to reconsider must be carried by a two-thirds majority vote. This 16.1 doesn't really address that whatsoever, which would leave one with the impression that a simple majority can pass a motion to reconsider.
Madam Clerk?
Thank you for repeating that. Actually, to my surprise, Robert's rules does call for simple majority
then,
as opposed to two-thirds.
Then I'm going to move that we make it two-thirds majority. Well, anyways, I'm going to move that we amend it to majority of council. Opposes that, fine. I'll move to reconsider on a simple majority.
That amendment's on the floor. Are there any comments or questions, Councillor Luberts?
What was the amendment now?
That the motion to reconsider must have a two-thirds majority to carry. So we make a decision. In order to reconsider that decision, we have to have a two-thirds majority.
That's I'm afraid I won't be able to support that amendment. A simple reason is, if I'm on the prevailing side, I'm the only I can reconsider. And the only reason somebody would reconsider is because they want to change their vote. So now they either want to be on the negative or the prevailing side. And I should be able to change my vote if I want to change my vote. It shouldn't be the decision of the majority of council whether I can change my vote or not. So I can't support that amendment. Thank you.
Councillor Butler?
So I'd like to ask for some clarification, because when I do the math for two-thirds majority, we're like, for seven people, we're at 4.5. So who's going to put half up? I'm just joking. But at any rate, I'm thinking to myself that a simple majority would be easiest as opposed to a two-thirds majority vote. I personally don't see the value in it.
Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to see it stick with a simple majority. I think for reconsideration, sometimes you're only looking to change one person's opinion if more additional information comes along. And I think it'd be a shame if that one person did change their mind for all the right reasons, but you still didn't reach that two-thirds. So I'd like to see it stay with a simple majority.
Are there any other questions or comments? I'll call the question. All those in favor? Councillor Gilbert, are you in favor, or do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question, just to follow up with Councillor Cyril. Maybe I'm not reading this correctly. Where is it where we have the majority? I'm not seeing that. I'm just seeing that.
I believe it's in Robert's rules. And Madam Clerk?
Thank you, through you, Madam Chair. It's not specified here, because anything that isn't specified in the rules of procedure is a default to Robert's rules, if you will, and Robert's rules identifies this with just a simple majority.
All right, thank you.
All those in favor? Opposed?
Okay, so thankfully there aren't any other amendments.
Madam Clerk with her hand up just really quickly.
Okay.
Sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to let the Mayor and the rest of Council know that I was able to look up Robert's rules, and the two-third majority vote is what is called for in...
All the questions.
Yes, thank you. That's right.
And just to circle back for the listeners, that amendment was defeated.
Okay, so if I might, the very last item that I have, Madam Chair, relates to the business subdivisions. This is paragraph 18.3. And this somewhat goes to the heart of what used to be done, what has been done over the past several years, and where we're drifting back to what used to be done. And that is, on the basis of this 18.3, the amendment, C, any business subdivision may be included at either meeting, which basically means essentially what we've got right now, which is a council and committee agenda with business from each business subdivision, each committee. And up until about 5 years ago, I think that's exactly what used to happen. There was a request that planning matters be put on the first council and committee meeting of each month to somewhat organize the public meetings and what have you. But I like it when you can have business from any committee on the committee agenda, simply because that allows us to deal with it. And presumably that's what 18.3C means, that if there's business that needs to be dealt with in a timely fashion, it can be put on any committee agenda. I don't know why. What I would like to do is ask staff why we shouldn't perhaps be going to the format where, in fact, that's exactly what happens. If we want to have public meetings at the on the first council meeting of each month, that's okay. But why should we constrain ourselves so that theoretically only infrastructure services and corporate services matter can be dealt with on a committee meeting, but not planning matters. This says that we can do it, and so really we're simply falling back to where we were prior to 2000. And I don't know whether that was a change that was made during the last term of council or just before. So, yeah, it would have been just before. This, I think, allows us, this provision allows us to do the business of the community much more efficiently, and it permits us to do it as we need it. So, you know, call it what you like. I think that we're basically changing the format. And so I don't know if there's anything further that would need to be done, whether there's any other type of bylaw that would need to be altered. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just to follow up with Mayor Redekop, I see that I'm just asking the question to Mayor Redekop. Are we suggesting that we have our subcommittee meetings all at the same at the same meeting? Is that what we're looking at? Is that what the, is that what was done before? Because when I came on council the last term, that's the way it is today. That's the way it was. We never changed it. So if it was that way before, to me it makes sense.
That's what was
not
done.
So much for ourselves, but for the general public, because now they have to be just as aware of our meeting schedule as we are, and I don't know that we should put that onus on the general public that they have to be well informed as to when the meetings are. If they want to address something at a meeting, if it has to do with corporate services, you know, they have to, I have to wait until corporate services meeting is up before I can discuss corporate services. They should be able to come to any meeting and discuss that. So I'm just wondering if maybe we should make the amendment that we go back to our previous.
I think what this, and now that I'm thinking about it, the change in format may have actually taken place in my last iteration as mayor. And I
you can remember that far back.
I didn't agree with it then. That's why I'm having trouble remembering. I didn't agree with it then, and I haven't agreed with it all along because I think it restricts us. These changes that the clerk is proposing really permit the flexibility that we need. So generally speaking, planning matters can be or are to be held the first Monday of the month. Generally speaking, corporate and community services, infrastructure services are generally held the third Monday, but any business can be held at any committee meeting. So whether we simply rely on that or whether we go back to formalizing a full committee agenda, I don't know. I like this, and I think maybe what we should do is see what happens, and if it works out fine, which I'm sure that it will, probably don't need to do anything further.
Anything further, Councillor Lubberts? Any other members of council have any questions? Councillor Passero?
Just a quick comment on the last discussion. I think we should leave it to staff to stock balance the reports, because the original intent was to separate CDS because they do tend to be quite lengthy. You have the public meetings, the open houses, and it used to be where you would have CDS, infrastructure, corporate services, boom, 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 at both councilman committee meetings. And by the time you actually got to infrastructure or corporate services, half the people either sleeping and half of us, it's midnight. So I think the intent is still to be there to group the community development services, although I'm still not used to all the new names, but to group anything under the planning aspect of things, but leave it to staff's option if we do need to add it. And I like the way the clerk is going, because up until this point, we would have motions coming forward to waive council rules of procedure, to add consent for an extra subdivision matters, just a whole big process just to throw something else on the agenda. So I like this direction, but I would just caution staff to make sure we continue to stock balance the agendas so we don't have one meeting going till midnight and another meeting with nothing happening.
Are there any additional comments or questions? Okay, I will call the question to the motion as amended. All those in favor? That carries. That brings us to report COS 02-2016. Can I have a mover? Councillor McDermott? Are there any questions or Councillor McDermott?
Just one item, and that is at the conclusion of, which would be page 3, where it says, we're talking about the Bridgeburg market, and it says, it is anticipated that the farmers market will continue to draw residents and visitors to the downtown core of Ridgeway and provide spin-off to local businesses. That should read Bridgeburg. That's my only comment.
That'll be corrected, I would imagine, before it comes through next week. Mayor Redekop?
Hey, Madam Clerk, Madam Chair, if I could just get a comment from the clerk. The body of the first recommendation makes no reference to farmers market, but that's clearly what this is about. And I'm just wondering whether the words for a farmers market shouldn't appear in that recommendation just before the words on an evergreen basis in the second last line.
Madam Clerk, would you like to comment on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This report came from a different department than mine, so I'm just briefly reading it. Okay, where is the proposal to insert the words farmers market?
The fourth line after the words Central Avenue and just before on an evergreen basis.
You, Madam Chair, would the words be for a farmers market?
Yes, because that's really the intent of the report. I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't put it in. I'm quite happy with whatever the clerk responds, but I think it should be in.
Mr. Cookett, would you like to comment?
Through your chair to the mayor. I totally agree that should be inserted in there. We've actually missed that. It clarifies the intent of that.
Then I'll move that, Madam Chair.
That amendment's on the floor. Is there any questions? Okay. All those in favor? That carries. Are there any additional questions to the report as amended? Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think this is somewhere where we need to, now we can read the amendment. Right, because now we need to clarify this is the recommendation, so the first that is going to be changed to read, and now we could have the clerk read how it will be amended, and then we can vote.
Madam Clerk?
Certainly, through you, Madam Chair, although the amendment has already carried, I'd be happy to read it out. The motion as amended would be that Council approves an extension of the license agreement with the Bridgeburg Station Downtown Business Improvement Area Board of Management for the continued use of the municipal parking lot on the south side of Jarvis Street close to Central Avenue for a farmer's market on an evergreen basis and in a form satisfactory to the town solicitor, and further, that council authorizes the town solicitor to execute the said license agreement on behalf of the town.
Are there any more questions, Councillor Liberts? Okay, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion as amended carries. That brings us to new business or inquiries. Does any member of council have any inquiries? Seeing none. Business status report. Are there any comments or questions with regard to the business status report? I'd like to hand the chair back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Zanko. That takes us to Planning and Development Services. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now opened.
a report PDS-29-2016 Industrial Land Strategy Interim Report is on the floor. Can I have a mover? Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by Your Worship. And I'd like to just bring to our constituents and those listeners out there that the recommendations have changed. It's been amended. And so the original five VATs are no longer in play. We have four. Actually, two have not been changed, but two have, and one has been dropped. So if I may, I'd like to read those recommendations. The first VAT, Council endorses the RCI Industrial Land Strategy Interim Report, including the statistical analysis contained herein, and further that Council identifies the need for an additional 125 net hectares, 184 gross hectares, 309 net acres, 455 gross acres of additional industrial land in Fort Erie, and further that Council advises the Region of Niagara to include additional 125 net hectares, 184 gross hectares, 309 net acres, 455 gross acres of additional industrial land supply for Fort Erie as a part of the ongoing municipal comprehensive review, and further that Council requests the Economic Development and Tourism Corporation, EDTC, to complete the industrial land strategy and for the purposes of tasks 7, 8, and 9 outlined in the RCI report and work plan, expand the Technical Advisory Committee to include the Director of Infrastructure Services and the Director of Corporate Services, as well as any other individual agreed on by the town and the EDTC. Does anybody have any questions or comments with respect to this report? Worship?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to, first of all, recognize that this addendum comes forth from our Director of Planning, and I want to thank him for further consideration of these recommendations in light of a lot of discussions that have taken place over the past several days. I very much appreciate the planner's position on this. I also want to say that I really like the report prepared by RCI, and I've had an opportunity to speak to the consultant who prepared the report, and he did make two further modifications in the report. We would have received an email, I think, the latter part of last week, maybe on Friday, where he makes reference in his economic or employment impacts to the fact that we are on the confluence of gateways, the Queen Elizabeth Highway and the 140 Netherby Road portion of what's called the Niagara GTA East Corridor. Very important in terms of economic opportunities. And then finally, and most importantly, the fact that we're on the border of one of the busiest border crossings between the two greatest trading partners in the world. Though that as well is extremely important. I like the analysis in the report. I like some of the comments made relative to the significance of population relative to employment, all very important. I like the history of the shovel-ready efforts of this municipality over the last, really starting in 2002, which have really led us to the point where we are now, which is that this is a critical issue for us. The municipal comprehensive review that's being undertaken by the region is taking some interesting twists and turns. We had been allocated so far a percentage of the anticipated new jobs in Niagara up to 2031. The terms of reference have somewhat changed. They're now the province now wants speculation on this out to 2041. We may or may not be in jeopardy of the 14% of jobs that the region allocated simply because there's a movement in the north part of the region to start to focus on natural growth in population that's going to occur simply because of the continued expansion of the Hamilton GTA. I like the RCI report because it indicates that population increase doesn't necessarily mean job increases. And the report also highlights the fact that Fort Erie has a solid employment base, which despite the fact that we haven't grown as much as Grimsby or Lincoln over the past 10 years, we still maintain a large discrepancy in the amount of employment that we have compared to Grimsby. So whereas we have over 11,000 jobs in this town with a population of 30,000, Grimsby has less than 8,000 jobs for a population of over 25,000. And they've had growth. That's explained in the report by what we all know. People that are living in the western part of the region are working in Hamilton, or they're working in parts of the GTA, so that the increase in the population doesn't necessarily translate into jobs. Now, the other challenge that we're faced with, and had an opportunity to discuss this with Mr. Brady, is that some of the people at the region may believe that population, in fact, does create jobs, that it creates the service type of jobs that people require, and that those service jobs, in some respects, particularly if you're talking about large hotels, you're talking about managers of those facilities, those are good paying jobs. And a lot of times industries now having to compete on a global market, there's a lot of pressure on those wages to keep those wages down, so that it's a real mixed bag. The point I'm trying to make is that we need to have a solid industrial land strategy. Parts 7, 8, and 9, which are to come, which will be the evaluation framework, and then the evaluation of the lands that we have already designated as industrial, lands that are within our urban boundary that could potentially be industrial lands, and then if we don't have sufficient to meet those targets that are referred to, looking at lands outside the urban boundary, we need to have a very solid evaluation framework. We need to have a very solid strategy in order to persuade the region that we need these additional lands, and we need the employment allocations that have been already protected. So we need to defend those. It's very important for the EDTC and the municipality to be able to put forward a solid common front. And so going forward, I would hope that these recommendations will get us to where we need to get. But this is a long, long battle that we're going to be waging for our future economic prosperity. So I'm hoping that the councillors will support these recommendations, and I think that they put us in a good spot. I had an opportunity to speak to a couple of the board members, and they're quite comfortable with these recommendations. So hopefully this will allow us to move forward to quickly address the balance of the tasks required in the industrial land strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other councillor? Councillor Lubritz.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just looking through the addendum here, the last that, and it's worded that we're requesting the EDTC to complete the industrial land strategy. Is that the EDTC is going to complete it with the addition to the Technical Advisory Committee, or is the Technical Advisory Committee only going to be called upon for tasks 7, 8, and 9 in the RCI report?
Your Worship?
That's the completion of the strategy. So tasks 1 to 6 have been completed. That's the interim report that we've got now. So that's been the analysis, and it identifies what our needs are. Tasks 7, 8, and 9 are the creation of the evaluation framework, and then the evaluation of the various properties so that we can determine what level shovel readiness or lack of shovel readiness we have with respect to our industrial lands. As Mr. Brady has pointed out, we need to be able to clearly identify if it's shovel ready, we've got the tick. That's a piece of property that we can sell. If it's not shovel ready, what is it that needs to be done to make it shovel ready? What are the costs associated with that? And then we can move forward. We can continue on. If going through that exercise, we find that there are some lands that really should not be in our industrial land inventory, they can be taken out. This is all work that the Technical Advisory Committee needs to do, and the addition of the Director of Infrastructure Services and Director of Finance meet some of the needs. As an example, when we're looking at the properties, the person that knows most about where the services in this municipality are would be our Director of Infrastructure Services, and he'll have some understanding of what the obstacles might be in trying to service a particular piece of property, or what the challenges may be. And the Director of Finance can also give advice as to, you know, what kind of resources we would need, what kind of financial planning we would need to contemplate in order to look at servicing some of the lands that need to be serviced. So that Technical Advisory Committee is really the body that helps to create the framework and does the actual evaluations. And they're all working with the consultant who is moving the process forward. It's the consultant, RCI, which will complete these tasks, working in concert with the Technical Advisory Committee, and then we'll get a final report that we'll need to deliberate on when that work is done. Cover your question?
Yeah, somewhat, but I'm just reading it, and if I read it out, it says it directs the EDTC to complete the industrial land strategy and for the purpose of tasks 7, 8, and 9. So the way I'm reading it, the EDTC is going to complete the land strategy study, right? The industrial land strategy. They're going to complete it. And then they're going to go to the advisory committee that's going to be composed of the new members of the advisory committee for tasks 7, 8, and 9. So this is the way I'm reading it. I think that it should read that for the purpose.
Can I just explain what this says? For the words?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Your interpretation.
It's a sentence. It's a two-part sentence. There are two things that we're going to be requesting. We're not directing. We're requesting the Economic Development Tourism Corporation to do two things. Number one, complete the industrial land strategy. Two, for the purposes of tasks 7, 8, and 9, which is the completion of the strategy, because there's only three components left, 7, 8, and 9, are outlined in the RCI report and work plan. To do that, the second thing, expand the Technical Advisory Committee to basically include the human resources necessary to do the evaluation, to do the 7, 8, and 9. So it's two parts. Complete the industrial land strategy, expand the Technical Advisory Committee.
Thank you very much. I just needed that clarification because when you read it, it looks like they're going to do one thing, and then when they're done that, they're going to go on and do another thing. But it's all going to be done together.
Absolutely.
I guess my second question would be, in the report that we did receive, on page 3 of the report, it goes on to talk about this Technical Advisory Committee. And who were the members of the this advisory committee? The original one.
Mr. Cricket?
Through you, Chair, to the Councillor. The original TAC, or Technical Advisory Committee, was made up with the General Manager of the EDDC, Mr. Jim Tebear, the Consultant RCI, Mr. Rick Brady, Ms. Kira Dolch, and myself.
I'm kind of confused as to why would the consultant be part of a committee? They were hired to do the report. Why would they be on the advisory committee?
Mr. Cookie?
Through you, Chair, to the Councillor. They're there to actually explain to us how they're going to complete the report, get direction from us, or not direction, I shouldn't say, but we're there to provide advisory advice of how he is moving forward. So it is appropriate for him to be at the table. It's not uncommon.
Okay, thank you. If I may, Madam Clerk, through you to Mr. Cook, how many meetings did this advisory committee have in order to bring this report forward or the strategy forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. But Mr. Cook,
through your chair to the counselor, that's the difficult question to answer because I only recall attending one. I believe they're saying there was three, one in which the town staff could not make it. So they say we were at two. Honestly, I'd have to check back through my calendar, but I only recall attending one.
So you recall attending one, but they're claiming that there was three, maybe two or three, two?
To you, Madam Chair, that is correct. They say there was three, of which one, Rick and Kira and myself, could not attend. So they're saying that we did attend two. I don't recall attending two. I only recall one, and I think Mr. Brady is on the same page.
And just to follow up, Madam Chair, the follow up on what our Mayor Redekop was saying earlier, how important it is for us to bring forward this land strategy. And there was one, maybe two meetings. I'm having difficulty trying to digest, I guess, whether our EDTC was considering this to be as important as we consider it to be. I mean, to do a land strategy, I think it's going to require more than one or two meetings. And I think to complete this, now that we know that, I think it's going to require more than one or two meetings to complete. And it may even bring more questions forward now that it's going to be a little bit more comprehensive. And I mean, I just want to make the comment that I'm not very happy with the answer that when this was in the hands of the EDTC and they put together this advisory committee, that they didn't take it as serious as it should have been.
If I may, I'd just like to comment with respect to that. I believe that the EDTC does take this very seriously, and in fact, they were a big proponent in pushing to have RCI replace a previous report that was inadequate in certain aspects. And this report is more robust. And the fact that the EDTC took the lead to identify the need for a more robust and a fulsome report with respect to what we need in our marketplace speaks volumes in itself. Are there any other councillors that would like to make a comment? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. One of the recommendations in the RCI report, it's recommendation D, speaks about a 2017 budget allocation for an area-wide environmental impact study. And I, at first glance, I'm in favor of that. I think that's a good idea. I'm just wondering, is that a standalone recommendation to council? Is that something staff will be bringing forward as a recommendation to council, or is that going to fall somewhere in most likely task 7, I think, to be the only place you could maybe slot that in? It's not spoken to directly in task 6, 7, or 8, but I just want to make sure that that is just not left in this report as it goes forward and it's actually an actionable item for further deliberation.
Mr. Brady?
To Councillor Passero. Certainly the RCI report has suggested that that kind of work be undertaken. It doesn't give the direction that I think it needs to, but nonetheless, I'm hoping that when the final report is brought forward, that it will clearly be outlined as to how that work should be undertaken, and direction will then be given to council so that council could endorse it at that point and then deal with it as part of a budget item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the director's comments. I'd very much to see staff flesh that out and add their opinions to that comment. I think it's worth looking at, and I appreciate staff's perspective on that in the future.
Thank you, Councillor. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubert?
Yeah, just to follow up on your comments, Madam Chair. If you read the report on page 3, the paragraph just before financial implications, the last paragraph on page 3, it says that this does not occur. It is highly unlikely that the final industrial land strategy prepared independently by the EDTC will be fully supported by town staff based on the way the interim report was prepared. So, I mean, I can only base my comments on the report that was brought forward, and it doesn't look like the way it was prepared that staff was willing to support it. Thank you.
Your Worship? Just a couple of things. The first relates to the issue that was raised by Councillor Becerro. And I know that in the comments made by Mr. Brady to the consultant after we received the report, there was a suggestion by Mr. Brady that there be more positive or assertive recommendation 5.4, and that in fact was altered. 5.4D was in fact altered to take a more assertive approach on the recommendation that there be that area, a wide environmental impact study. And the second point that I wanted to make was that ultimately this will be the industrial land strategy of the municipality. Ultimately, this is going to be our industrial strategy. It's nice for us to have these professionals working on it, but ultimately, when it comes to the public, we are the ones who will be accountable for the land strategy. And like everything else in life, we're going to get out of this land strategy what we're prepared to put into it. So there may be occasions when we're going to have to, as councillors, step up with respect to this and make sure that when we get the final report, A, that it's a good report based on all the work that is necessary, and that we have made sure that we have monitored the things that have gone on in terms of mixing the ingredients to get the report. And then ultimately, we're the ones who have to be prepared to champion the recommendations made, so that it's been all well and good to talk about shovel-ready land since 2002. This council is going to have to make sure that we get shovel-ready land. So, I think it's important that we recognize the work done by our staff, that we recognize the work done by the consultant and the EDTC. But ultimately, we're the folks who are on the front line, and ultimately this will be our land strategy. So I think we all need to bear that in mind.
Thank you, Your Worship. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Motion carried. That concludes Planning and Development Services.
Thank you very much, Councillor Butler. That was very good. So now we're at scheduling of meetings. And Councillor Zanko?
Thank you, Your Worship. We have a traffic coordinating committee meeting coming up this Thursday, March the 24th. That's being held here at Town Hall in Conference Room 1.
And the time?
Sorry, noon.
Any other meetings? Councillor Butler.
I don't have any meetings, but I would like to remind, if I may, Your Worship, about the Hollywood North Party on the Patio on May 14th.
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. So VIP tickets are now on sale. That includes champagne, hors d'oeuvres, a meal, and it also includes all of the entertainment that has grown up here in the Fort Erie area and has launched their successful careers elsewhere. Our MC of the evening is Les Trent from Inside Edition, who was an alumni from FUS. And the VIP tickets also includes an opportunity to win a trip or two to New York City, airfare included, and choice of hotel. So it is going to be a fabulous night, and I hope to sell many more tickets. We're looking at hosting 540 VIP. We've sold 253 to date with a week into sales. So those interested in obtaining tickets or more information can contact either Councillor Pissarro or myself or any member of council for that matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Sounds like they're going hot, so I better make arrangements to get some tickets. Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Looking at my schedule, we do have a meeting, an Environmental Advisory Committee meeting on Wednesday, March 23rd. That's this Wednesday at 5:30 in Conference Room 3, I believe.
Thank you. Any other meetings? If not, then I'll ask for a motion to go into closed session. And that is at 8:16 p.m. Any questions or comments? All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried.